step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen. 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 This moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air. Performance number 508. We call this the Skippy Day. You are listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3. I'm Lisa Sheps. I am joined by my co-host, Miss Nicole Shiro, and extraordinaire apprentice, Rebecca Melanson. Do not go away. We'll be right back.
Hurry, hurry, and step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your step right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this. 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 On the wonders of this.
It is Wednesday, March 20th, 2019. On the show today, we have the Vortex talking about their garden party, and different stages will be on to talk about their show, The Book Club. And of course, we'll have lively conversations of the world of theater in Austin, Texas, New York, New York, Chicago, Illinois, London, England, and Indianapolis, Indiana. Stick with us. Okay, that's great. That was I Can't Say No.
You just kicked it right off there.
I did. So do you know who that was singing?
No, but I know you're going to surprise me and tell me.
I don't know if I'm going to surprise you.
I feel like I know, but...
It's Allie Stryker.
Was it?
Yeah, who's playing Ado Annie in the current production. Okay. Which we're going to talk about in just a second.
It sounded current, but I wasn't sure.
It's very current. Nicole Shiro, checking in with you. Welcome back.
Hello.
Welcome back to me and
I
to
know,
you.
I know. We've just been chips in the night.
We've been chips passing the night. How are you doing? Checking in with you.
I am here.
Well, you know what? That is...
I am alive.
I am thrilled that you are here. I'm also checking in with Rebecca Melanson, who I've shoved her into the deep end once again. How are you doing, Rebecca? We're sharing a microphone.
We're paddling in the deep end of the pool. It's awesome.
Paddling. So I threw her in. She's operating all the faders and all the buttons, and I just threw in some problems. We have a skipping CD. That's always fun, isn't it?
How did you do? Did you do that just to test me? I think you did.
I did. We like to show how the sausage is made here on Offstage and On the Air. Well, I would like to take a moment to thank Kim Simpson, another wonderful international folk bazaar. It is Tunisian Independence Day. What do you do? What did you do for Tunisian Independence Day today?
So far, I haven't, but listened to International Folk Bazaar.
I'm wearing chartreuse in honor.
A little crazier.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Well, let's introduce the folks that are here. We have a lot of people who I've known for a long time who have yet to be on the show. So this is really great. And among those is Alex Cogburn. Hi, Alex.
Hello.
I'm going to pronounce your last... Just dawn on me. I've never said your last name out loud before.
That's right. It's like Rooster Cogburn.
Cogburn. I said it right. And Heather Barfield. Hi, Heather.
Hi, Lisa.
Now, we were talking... You've not been on the show before, have you?
Once.
Okay. Well, then never mind. we have Crystal Kelly. Hi, Crystal.
Hi.
We have Nikki Zook.
Hello.
And Brandy... Andrade. I told you I was going to ruin it.
Andrade.
It's exactly as it's spelled. And I told you, didn't I? We talked about this before. I was going to ruin
you
it.
You did. It's Andrade. No worries. And I answer to anything that's sort of randomly correct because no one ever gets it.
So I want to talk about what I first played there, which was Oklahoma. Some people have been calling it Dirty Oklahoma. Is anybody that's familiar with the current production of Oklahoma?
Like I call you Dirty Lisa?
Yes. it just started previews at the Studio 50. Circle in the Square. So this is an immersive version and a groundbreaking version of Oklahoma. The orchestra is only seven pieces.
Which I find is so crazy for the orchestrations of this group.
Of this show.
Yeah,
right, exactly. But it's gotten nothing but raves about it. It's done immersively. It's set in like a hoedown. When it played at St. Anne's Warehouse, and it played as a runway. So there were seating on it. Heather's nodding her head. Have you seen it? Did you see it?
No.
Was it right into the microphone.
Is it cobbler or pie? What is it they had?
I don't know.
I don't remember.
It's cornbread like and... Oh, it's cornbread like, and chili.
Cornbread and chili. That's what it is. There's food. There's all sorts of stuff involved.
Yeah, immersive entertainment. That's the way everything seems to be going in many ways these days.
Yeah, that's why Offstage and On the Air has gone immersive. I'm standing. My one foot is in chili and the other foot is in cornbread.
Delicious.
The reviews were all really good when it was opened off Broadway. That was... oh my God, I just said her name. Her last name is Stryker. Allie Stryker, who I discovered when I saw her in the Glee
spin-off show, reality show
yeah.
where they picked people.
But she's
up.
Awesome. She was also in Spring Awakening, the Deaf West version of Spring Awakening, and she is just kicking A. So she's doing a really great job.
Yes, indeedy.
She's playing Ado Annie, and I really want to see her. You know, I've never been excited about seeing a production of Oklahoma because, as you know, it's not one of my favorites.
No, even Hugh Jackman could not save it for me in that London version.
But I'll
tell
you
it's
what.
Just painful to me.
I reread the Times review of it, and they were talking about the ballet, which is, for me, the hardest part to watch.
Yes. Yeah.
But
one of the hardest parts to watch.
So I want to read this this paragraph from Jesse Green. This review, by the way, was one of those things where they set it up as a conversation between Jesse Green and Ben Brantley.
You don't know how you feel.
I don't
you
know
don't
how
like
I feel
him.
About
yeah,
this.
I know.
But Jesse
I think
Green,
they get lazy. Let me send him an email. Brantley, Green.
Exactly.
Laziness.
So Green
Pick
said,
it up.
Green says, the choreography by John Higginbotham as danced primarily by Gabrielle Hamilton shocked me at first in its raw expression of Laurie's sexual dilemma. But then I recalled how shocking Agnes DeMille's originals were said to be. And it's true. When I started thinking about it, that Agnes DeMille choreography for its time set, which
was
is set during World War II.
Naughty.
Very naughty.
Scandal.
I came to see this dance at the top of Act Two as a powerful and necessary resetting of the story. And so I kind of like that. It's making me rethink my hatred of the ballet.
Jesse had an aha moment.
Yeah. So it's just...
I'm open to changing my mind.
Yeah,
so, I mean, I have on other shows before that I've been like, I can't stand them. And there's been a cast that I'm like, you just made
what did
me
you just
like
say?
That.
What did you just say?
I can't stand that.
So what I
but
usually
now
say
you
is,
just made
I,
me like it.
I usually say, I can't.
I can't stand
them. All right. So, Kiss Me, Kate. Before we go into Kiss Me, Kate, Oklahoma just started previews yesterday. Is opening sometime.
It was
in
like
the
3 weeks
future.
From now.
I don't know. So unprepared.
Close to the end of April, Lisa.
But Kiss Me, Kate did open in the past week.
It did.
And Kiss Me, Kate, with your favorite person, Kelly O'Hara. Who got love letters.
You make it sound like I hate the woman.
Yes,
I don't dislike the woman.
No,
I
you
just
do.
Am not a fan of the when she sings. But I don't dislike her.
Here's something I have to admit to in front of everybody here. I've never seen Kiss Me, Kate.
For reals?
For reals.
Me neither.
I am.
I've decided I want to go watch the movie. So I've always found the, you know... What it's
you
based
haven't
on,
even
is,
seen the movie?
What did I say when I said I haven't seen Kiss Me, Kate?
I'm very perplexed by this, yeah, Lisa Sheps.
I know. So Kelly O'Hara and Will Chase play Lily and Fred. It's a story within a story about a frantic couple dealing with the frantic couple they play on stage. And as we know, this play is kind of fraught for its very primitive sexist views on...
There's nothing sexist about it. What is wrong with you?
I know. I'm reading.
Stop, like, you know, fake news, Lisa.
Oh. But what they have done, they've reimagined. They have not changed a word of the script.
That's what I find fascinating.
But they've posed it as they are taming each other versus Petruchio is taming Catherine.
Which I knew they were doing this, you know, bringing it to the 21st century. But when I read that they didn't change anything, I was like, that's so interesting.
So love letter to Kelly O'Hara almost all the way around. The Jesse Green made it a critic's pick, but listen to this paragraph and tell me whether you think it. I don't understand his making it a critic's pick and saying this. That too many other numbers disappoint is a problem not just in the choreography but with the overall staging, which by the middle of the second act seems to run out of invention. In the song, Bianca, Mr. Blue executes an amazing calisthenic feat, and at one point he taps upside down beneath a stair landing, but the big picture gets lost. The wit of Bianca's always true to you in my fashion disappears amid too much stage business, and brush up your Shakespeare, usually a double entendre showstopper for two comic gangsters, just slows the show down instead.
Oh, that's like the number.
And yet he makes it a critic's pick. I don't get that.
That's bizarre. That's like saying one in a chorus line is a bad number.
One.
Like, do you know what I mean? Like, that's... But yep. Then it's a critic's pick. Yeah. No. So, again, let me get hold of Jesse Green.
Yeah. So I didn't realize that John Pankow was in it, who I love John Pankow, and I had the pleasure of working with him on Cloud Nine. And friend of the show and personal friend of mine, Larry Hawkman, did the orchestration.
I was about to say, wasn't Larry a part of this?
And got a big, nice nod from Mr. Green. Other notable critics said, my dear friend Charles Isherwood, were like this. He said, showcasing the golden voice of one of Broadway's bona fide treasures, Kelly O'Hara, opposite the terrific Will Chase, the revival is an effervescent throwback to the years when the musical theater was reliable, non-chemical antidepressant.
Nice. Interesting.
Yep.
They like to use the word effervescent a lot in theater reviews.
It's a bubbly word.
I'm just saying, like, for all those crazy words they make you look up, they use effervescent quite a lot.
It's the champagne of words.
I don't know. Again, when I talk to Jesse, I'll put that on my list.
Okay, Frank Rizzo says, despite imperfections in plot and presentation, the show is still filled with musical pleasures that audiences will appreciate, now without wincing after a fashion. So
interesting.
So by and large, they were relatively positive. They weren't raves, although all of the quotable quotes that I quoted was just everybody was saying good things about Kelly O'Hara. And it already extended through June.
I was about to say it already had the extension. So
yep.
I believe it was June, mid-June already,
I
like
think
the 13th.
It's end of June.
I think it's June 13th.
I just said through June. So if I was working on my little computer and I thought to bring it, I would have pressed the little button that goes dunk, 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 right now.
It's basically our crime section. So yes. Give us the scandal, Lisa.
Yes, and in the essence of having everybody see how the sausage is made, I'm going to tell Rebecca to get ready to play that one number that we talked about.
Dunk, dunk.
Dunk, dunk. But this is, in my notes, it's called Poopgate. Have you heard of this?
Yes, Lisa. I went on to put this on the link, so I'm like, never mind. Lisa covered it. This is all I want to talk about.
Poopgate.
Yep.
So
there's been a lot of phantom pooping, and the fact that it's hit Broadway is...
phantom pooping at rehearsal studios where auditions are going on.
Yes.
Nobody knows what it is, who it is. They are presuming that...
Why. They have a theory on the why.
They have a theory on the why, but that's pretty much debunked. The why is... who here has heard of the Is it equity?
Hashtag is it equity.
So that's where, so many shows, and one day I want to talk about this further, because I do have an issue when a show says direct from Broadway coming to your city, and it's not an equity cast.
Right.
Now,
right.
I'm not one that says that I...
But is it still the same creatives?
It is the same creative.
Then it technically is direct from Broadway.
Technically it is direct from Broadway. Mm-hmm. But I would assume that if it's direct from Broadway, that it is a professional production. I'm using air quotes, meaning equity. So this was during the first or either the second poop incident happened during a audition for Magic Mike.
Both of them. Human poop we're talking
human
about.
We believe so. Has not been verified by a lab.
Human poop, dun, dun. Two different locations, two different Magic Mike auditions, right. Like
and
two different days.
Both of these were open calls, both equity and non-equity. So one of the ideas is it's somebody...
revolting against the not making the call open to union versus non.
This poop was found
In the rehearsal, well, it was actually the
someone
first one.
Someone stepped in it, the first one.
The auditor stepped in it.
They said, oh, blank, and then went, oh, wait, it really is blank.
Right.
I kid you not, this was in the article.
There is a bunch of spoofs that actors have done, and I'm going to play one. This is video, but I'm going to play a piece of...
The best is half of them, the other actors doing it, are backstage at their own show in spare time, right. Creating these videos.
This one isn't, but... give a listen, and we will come right back after this.
It wasn't my that you found that pearl. I was doing 16 bars of I'm Not That Girl when the dancer shrieked and began to hurl, so it couldn't be my in the first place.
Wait a minute, that's not mine. Redirect your scorn, and I know for sure because I didn't eat no corn, and it's filled with corn, so it can't be mine, and I know you ate Chipotle, so it must be thine. See, it's your poop.
No.
Yes, it's your poop.
No.
Yes, it is.
It's not.
It fits.
Is it me, or does auditioning give you the shits?
Yep. That's the one. So it's fun. And that one, that was just a little piece of it. That, of course, was a spoof from Into the Woods. It then segued into the auditor doing something from Les Mis.
And who says theater is elitist?
So I just think that's funny. Dunk, dunk.
Dunk, dunk. No, I died laughing so hard when I read it. I was like, really? Really?
Yep. So let's check the time. Oh, we're doing good. So, you know, we talked not too long ago about the series that was going to be done by Live Nation, the Arika Group, and EBG about taking dark Broadway theaters and having rock stars or musicians play a turn in them. And we talked about it a while, and I am very anti that if it's taking theaters away from shows, but if the theater is sitting empty and they don't consider it a Broadway show, so they're not eligible for a Tony, I'm all for it. And so we have the first two. So the first one is Morrissey.
We talked slightly a bit last week about it, but it's only a week, so it's not even anything like Bruce, and they're not calling it Morrissey on Broadway or billing it like Bruce. No. So I was like, I'm okay with it.
So that's
but I find that a very controversial person, as much as I love the Smiths and the Morrissey, I found it a very odd choice. Okay. In this day and age, I was like, oh, interesting.
Yeah. He was the first musician. He didn't do a 7-day Broadway engagement from May 2nd to May 11th. And the second one is Yanni.
I was like, another. I was like, and when I saw Yanni yesterday, I was like, boy, they're like polar opposites.
So he's going to be May 28th through June 2nd. It's going to be called Pure Yanni in Residence on Broadway. He's going to do, and you know I love this, a talk back after every performance.
Listen, y'all, I'm going to tell you right now, my mom dragged me to Yanni once. I was like, really, do I have to go? I had a ball.
I bet you.
I had a ball.
I bet she's good.
I had a ball. I, you know, Yanni, I was like, well, I can just say I saw that in my lifetime.
So you, Nicole Shiro, know how I feel about Jekyll and Hyde, the musical.
Yeah, I know. I saw this. I was wondering how you felt about this.
Well, I don't
I
like
guess
it
if they
you know
sing your one song the way you like it, then you're
which
okay.
Which they won't. Yeah. So Jekyll and Hyde, anybody familiar with the musical Jekyll and Hyde? Yeah, we have nods, by the way, don't work on the radio.
Yes.
Yeah.
Written by Frank Wildhorn, a Texan.
Right. So written by Frank Wildhorn, a Texan.
Some crazy people playing the roles.
Making a movie out of it.
Yeah, they are.
It's been played for 30 years. It had a revival in 2013.
Yeah, a few
I
revivals.
Saw the original 30 years ago. My God.
Isn't that crazy? I know. I know. I did the same thing when I saw that. I went, oh, my. Yeah.
They don't have any of the creatives announced as of yet. Yeah. The one thing I liked about it, so he does a duet. Has anybody seen it other than me?
No, I have.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm talking to our captured audience.
Only on cinema.
So he does a duet with himself as Jekyll and Hyde.
Awesome.
And he flips his hair over. So it's like the short-headed... Mr. Hyde and the long-haired Dr. Jekyll, and every time he switches parts, he flips his hair over. I loved that.
Lisa loved it. Loved it.
So I doubt.
Who did you see? You
movie.
Saw? I've seen a few
I saw
people
the original,
play it. You
it
saw?
Was.
Yeah, the Hoff was interesting. I saw the Hoff do it. David Hasselhoff.
Oh, you know what? I think that may be who I saw it with.
I thought you saw the Hoff, and we
I
had
think
this
I did
conversation
because we were working with him at the time. Because
I started singing that awful song, "I'm a Night Rocker."
Yep, David Hasselhoff. That's bad.
Oh, he has a few albums out. He's huge in Germany.
Oh yeah.
So I. He is indeed.
He is. I'm not kidding.
That is a holdover joke from the 80s.
I'm a night rocker. That's really how the song goes, and it's sad because I know.
It is. Well, we have a sad passing to discuss here. I'm sure you saw this. Chico, the co-star of Legally Blonde, passed away.
I know. I saw that.
Chico is a dog. He was a little dog. You can see a picture of him here.
He was a chihuahua.
He was a little... Well, yeah, he's a chihuahua. Mm-hmm. And he was...
Did you question my Legally Blonde knowledge? Did you really?
He was rescued just before he was going to be euthanized by Bill Barlone, who does animal wrangling for a lot of shows. But what I found interesting...
He likes to rescue the animals, which is...
He does. He rescues
amazing.
The animals. This dog ran for the entire Broadway run.
Isn't that cray cray?
Of course, it only ran for three shows, but... No, it ran for a while.
It ran a lot longer.
Mm-hmm. And he did numerous regional and touring productions.
Mm. Chico was everywhere.
And perhaps you can explain this to me, because I don't remember this in the show. But it said, Chico made Broadway history as the first animal actor to conduct a conversation on stage in real time with the actors. What do they mean by that?
He was barking in like the back and forth banner.
So does Toto.
Well, no, Toto didn't. There was no Toto.
When
didn't.
I played Toto, she did.
Sandy doesn't bark back and have a conversation. Nana's a puppet and Peter Pan. I mean, should we go through all the dogs?
No, no, I think you're done.
Okay.
We're done. We're all done.
But I mean, if that's kind of hilarious that that's what they really wrote in an article. The dog barked. That's what dogs do.
The dog barked. Okay. The last thing I want to talk about is a very interesting article in the Rag, the failing New York Times. He hasn't said that in a while, has he?
I don't know. I don't think so. But you know what? I'm sure it'll be top of the news cycle today, Lisa, that you put it out in the universe.
I have two things to talk about, but I'm going to talk about something before that. We have a host for the Tony Awards. It will not be hostless this year.
What did you think about this when they announced it?
You know what? I wasn't all that...
I had a feeling. I was like, I don't think Lisa's going to care.
No, James Corden is hosting it. And so last year, as you remember, Josh Groban and Sarah Bareilles co-hosted it. What did I say when you announced that they were going to do that? Do you remember my reaction? Yeah, I was But when I saw it, I was, yeah!
Well, it's the Grobes. The Grobes rocks at everything he does.
I'm sorry,
and I told you that when you went, I'm like, Lisa, it's the Grobes.
It's not the Grobes that
the
did
Grobes.
It for me, though. It wasn't the Grobes that did it for me. It was the Grobes and the Bareilles.
Because
together.
The Grobes has such magic, it ran off on Bareilles.
No,
it was all the Grobes.
I think it's the other way around. I love me some Sarah Bareilles. So.
We need to get the Grobes on the show.
He would like that.
Bring me back.
Anyway, so this is the second time for James Corden to do it. He did it in 2016. He's won...
I know why they're doing this. Because they announced like 2 weeks ago they're doing One Man, Two Governors as a movie. And he's trying to get his little...
Yep.
And they're trying to put him back in there. And I think he's testing the waters from being host Carpool Dude. And
One Man, Two Governors. He won a Tony Award for that. I forgot that he was in the History Boys, the Alan Bennett play.
See.
He was in the
History
Boys.
He was, indeed.
He was a wee lad at that time.
Indeed, indeed.
And the last thing, when we talk about the failing New York Times, there's a great article called Doors Open for Women and People of Color at the Top Ranks of American Theater. Did you read this, Heather?
I saw that, yeah.
It's a fascinating article, and it talks about, there's been a, I'm going to just say it's a cabal of white men running the major theaters around the country.
What?
Exactly. And due to attrition in some cases, but also bad behavior in other cases, there's turnover in a lot of different theaters, and they're typically, or they're in many cases, being filled by women and people of color.
Yeah.
Women have been named to 41% of the 85 jobs filled since 2015. And people
said that number, when I saw that percentage, I was like, whoa, that's awesome.
People of color are 26%. So the article just goes on to talk about a lot of the details of this. But one of the things that I wanted to call, I was going, all right, this is good. Times have changed. Well, no, they really haven't. Mm-hmm. So I just want to read this one quote from, oh my God, what's her first name? Her last name is Goyanis. She's the new artistic director of something. Darn it, Lisa, you're bad. Anyway, she's one of the new artistic directors, a female woman, I believe, of color. So she said theater leadership, theater leadership is still not broadly reflective of the natures of demographics. This is what she said, quote, white men still have a big piece of the pie, so whatever you do, please do not intimate that suddenly there's a sea change, yeah, that women or people of color have the bigger piece. It's just not true. So there's still work to be done.
Absolutely.
But we're moving in the right direction.
But to see that there's actual progress, like to actual see, like instead of someone saying to you, yeah, I know there's progress, but to like see it.
Clarified numbers.
CN, we call that.
This is decades of work.
Absolutely.
Had, so, you know, yeah, but 2018 ain't going to solve it all.
No. But I'm thrilled that it's happening, and I'm thrilled that hopefully it will continue to happen. So we're going to take a little break. We're going to listen to something from Kiss Me, Kate. This is the Maren Mazie. This is Maren Mazie, the late great Maren Mazie, who passed away last year.
Her husband just ran a half marathon in her name. Did you see that? Mm-hmm. That was really awesome.
So I decided to play that version of Kiss Me, Kate. It's from the 2009 or 1999. It had a 9 in it.
No, I think it was 2000.
It might have been.
I believe.
Well, whatever. Anyway, it's from that revival. So this is So In Love.
Strange dear.
And we are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nicole Shiro.
Lisa Sheps and Nicole Shiro.
And Rebecca Malençon.
Hello, hello, hello.
Right into the microphone, Rebecca.
Hello, hello, hello.
Thought I taught you better than that. And just to keep we'll just do this live on the air. Alex, I just asked you to choose a number between 1 and 20?
Yeah, 30.
Something, whatever. I said 1 and 30. What
he picked
was it?
A number.
14.
So you're going to want to queue up 14 on CD number 1 and stand by. All right. Now we're going to talk about different stages. The book club. I'm really excited to talk about this show. So here from that show, we have Nikki Zook, who is the director.
Hello.
And Brandy Andrade.
Yes. Hi.
Yay! I was like, you just said it.
Because I told myself Michael and... whatever his
Andretti?
Name is. Yes, thank you.
There you go.
Oh, my
God. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Is that what you used? That's really funny.
So
you made a sports reference.
Nikki, tell us.
Which is not very you, Lisa.
I have a Michael Andretti story someday.
You know, that just made my day, Lisa. Okay.
So, Nikki, tell us about the show. I'm guessing it's about a book club.
Yeah. Surprise,
okay,
surprise.
Thanks for being on the show.
Right? The twist is that it is a book club that is being filmed as a documentary by a famous Danish documentarian, and all the juicy stuff happens while these people forget they're being filmed. So,
uh-huh.
Yeah, just typical book club kind of stuff. You got it. Well, we have the longtime members, and then the newer members, and then the stranger who shows up that one person invited
without being vetted.
Are we talking about a
without being vetted? I love it.
So, are we talking about a specific book in this? And is it a
several,
book?
That
it,
there oh, will several. Be several books that, oh, that will be yeah. talked about. Each scene has a different book.
So each scene, this happens over a span of time.
Yeah, yes. So we meet them at several different meetings, and each time they're discussing a new book.
Okay.
And they discuss everything from Moby Dick all the way down. They start discussing high versus low culture, and they read, can I say? That
sure.
They read Twilight.
Oh.
So they run the gamut, and they have really strong feelings about this.
So
and
this
the
is
arguments
a contemporarily
ensue.
Written play.
Yes.
I was about
yes.
to say, if Twilight's in there, I'm going to say it. Oh, somewhat yeah. of a yeah, contemporary
it's first,
play.
It premiered in 2008, mm-hmm. and then it had, I think, a sort of bigger
revision.
Production mm-hmm. in 2013 at the Arena Stage, which was...
We like the Arena Stage.
When Karen Zacharias became the resident playwright there for a little while.
Right. And I was just about to mention that it was written by Karen Zacharias. It's Zacharias, not Zacharias.
Right, Zacharias.
Okay,
yes.
We'll always be Zacharias for me.
I was just about to go.
You know, that's how we pronounced it when I lived in Paris. Hey, you know what? Before we go on, I want to take a little tangent and see what we heard in number 14. So
here we go.
Alex chose 14. Let's listen to what it is. Well, it seems to be Gado. we don't know why it didn't go, but we'll get that fixed. We'll listen to it in a while. It'll happen. So this takes place over a span of time. We have, do you actually have somebody with a camera there going?
Well, that part is just mimed. The actors are looking in a direction where the camera is supposed to be.
So we don't see the camera.
Yeah, we don't actually see the camera. But there is portions of it that have been pre-filmed and portions that look like they have been pre-filmed that you see on a film screen. And so it kind of ties in with the documentary.
So does this sort of go into the genre of mockumentary that we've been seeing a lot of?
A little bit, yeah.
I have to tell you, so this is going off on a little tangent. Has anybody watched Documentary Now? We talked about it on this show a few weeks ago.
Oh, I love that.
Since we talked, they did a musical. They did a musical three weeks ago.
Oh, my gosh, amazing.
And in the style of the documentary of when they shot Companies.
Yes.
Original cast recording. This was the same thing. I forgot what the musical was called, but it was pretty funny. Anyway, so it's very mockumentary style. Do you have takes to the camera, or I guess to the audience in this game?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Several moments where suddenly people realize, oh, there's a camera. We're supposed to be ignoring this camera because it's supposed to be a just recording real life in real time kind of situation, but then people realize they said something that suddenly there's an awkward moment because, mom and dad are going to see this. Great.
So, Brandy, what role do you play?
So I got this really funny, interesting part. So I'm not really in the book club. We meet the book club and they've got all these scenes. And then interspersed with their scenes, you're meeting these various other characters who presumably have been interviewed as well and who are going to be part of the documentary.
Uh-huh.
So you meet all of my characters as sort of asides in the film screen as if I was interviewed at some point. So you are kind of going...
So this is like the movie Reds, where every now and then you'll see Georgie Jessel come and do an interview in the middle of the movie.
Yeah, I mean, so you're seeing it partly in real time, and then partly you're sort of jumping out of time and you're seeing the finished product.
Cool, and are you several characters?
Yes, that was kind of why I wanted to do this part, because I get to be five completely different characters with major costume changes, body style changes, everything, and I just thought it was so much fun.
So we're gonna hear two of those, I assume, today. Can you set us up? I'd love to hear. Do you want to do them both right next to each other? Or do you want to do one, talk about it, and I'll let it be up to you guys?
Sure. So the first character is, he's one of my favorites. He is in a penitentiary outside of Boston, and he deals in books in the way some prisoners deal in drugs or other illicit materials. And so he provides people with a release, and he's got his own currency, and he decides how much sections of the book are worth. And so he's kind of hilarious. And then the final character that you meet in the show is a librarian, and she has encouraging words to say about living your life and loving books, and that seems kind of fun to me too.
Okay, great. Well, this is Brandy Andrade.
You were on a roll. Come on now.
He's gonna relax.
It's Brandy.
Exactly.
She's gonna be.
I'm giving you your beep like a film.
She's gonna be doing a take two. She's gonna be doing a piece from different stages production of the book club. Let's meet her two characters.
Here in the big house, we got a different sort of currency. Long days here in the joint, and everyone's looking for some kind of release. They call me the bookend. Goes like this. First three chapters, I am able to provide for free. You like that? You want more? Well, the next three cost you three cigs. Hooked? Need another fix? Well, chapter 7 to 9 be a whole pack. And the book junkies, they come begging for the last chapters. And that's where the price jacks up to full chocolate bar. And that's where the craziness begins. The begging, the threats, the altercations. Shoot. One punk is in solitary today for perpetrating on my person to cut me if I didn't tell him the ending to Presumed Innocent by Scott Turow. I protect myself. I do not read one word of those books. It's simple freakonomics. You want to stay safe? Never dabble in what you deal.
Wow, that's tough. Yeah, yeah. Do you have a catcher in the rye? I need a fix of catcher in the rye. All right, let's hear the second character.
Okay, the other lady, the other person is a retired librarian from North Carolina. I am Mrs. Simpson, and today I am thrilled to tell you that I am learning to skydive. Old librarians can be crazy that way. Well, I'm delighted to give you chickadees two little bits of advice. One, read books. Real books, books you can hold in your hand and carry in your head and in your heart. My life has been decorated by every one of my foster kids and by every book I have ever read. In fact, yesterday, after 62 years of trying, I finally finished Ulysses by James Joyce. Oh, which brings me to my second piece of advice, which is this. Get off your ass and do something with what you read. Because reading about life is not the same as living your life. Not the same at all.
What fun! So you're playing a it sounds kind of Boston, New Englandy gangsta. You're playing a North Carolinian librarian. Give us a couple more, and then we got to run. We're totally out of time. But go ahead and give us some more.
Oh, the other one is a jaded literary agent from New York who's a chain smoker and has a lot of information about how hot it is to get your book read. And because I can't even tell you how many millions mm-hmm. and millions of manuscripts are submitted each year, but it's a friggin' heartbreaking colossal number. And these are the facts. Of the millions and millions of manuscripts that are submitted each year, only 250,000 are published. And out of the 250,000 books that are published, the average American reads less than three. Mm-hmm. You do the math.
Don't make me do math. So we are totally out of time. When do you guys open?
We open this Friday.
This Friday. And you play through when?
April 13th.
And where are you performing?
Santa Cruz Theater.
I love that little theater.
I love that theater.
Well, best of luck. I look forward to seeing the show.
Thank you. Yeah, you can see how talented my cast is.
I see how talented. So wonderful. So that was Nikki Zook. And Brandy and Gerard and oh my god,
you totally got it, you just doubted yourself.
Yeah, you know what, it's hard. There were different stages production of The Book Club by Zarin Zacharias at the Santa Cruz Theater March 22nd through April 13th. For more information, differentstages.org.
Hi, I'm Audrey.
And I'm Lori.
And we're the Radio City Rockettes. And
I'm sorry.
And just for kicks, you're listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP, Hornsby, Austin, 91.7 FM.
So good the first time. All right, sorry.
And we are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nicole Shiro.
Lisa and Nicole.
And Rebecca Melanson.
Hello.
I believe she should say bonjour.
Bonjour.
Bonjour. Comment allez-vous?
C'est Rebecca Le Monson.
Je vais bien, merci.
She's pushing buttons over here. All right. So we heard number 14. That was the Radio City Rockettes. And that was a good job.
That was a nice choice.
We have not heard them in a while.
We haven't heard them in a while.
We're going to have to just very quickly go through the local stuff. I do want to remind
folks.
Just go.
Do it.
That... Co-op is underwriting and being the sole sponsor of the Bulb Story Slam at Ground Floor Theater this Monday. For more information about the Story Slam, the Bulb Story Slam, you may visit groundfloortheater.org. And did you see SVT's doing... a version of Antigone called Antigone?
Yes, I saw this. It made me happy. I love Antigone. So the fact that, you know, I love when people switch it and do their own. Yeah.
Well, SVT always does.
I know that. And I was like, they're good at doing that.
Yep. So it is playing at the DAC, the Doherty Arts Center, on the 21st. That's today. No, tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Through April 6th.
Yes. That would be 2 weeks from now.
That would be.
No, I had that on there, and then my computer died on me while I was over here, so it's across the hall now, and I can't read the other stuff.
Right. Well, let's do Today in Theater History, shall we?
Today in Theater History?
Today in Theater History.
What happened?
Well, I'm going to go way...
What happened?
I'm going to go way back to 1828, when I was just a lass. This is the birth of Norwegian playwright.
Is it? Could it be?
It is. Henrik Ibsen. Or Henry Gibson, as I used to say in the 70s.
Did you really?
Yeah, well, because of Henrik Ibsen.
That loud door.
Yeah, no, yeah. I know.
And
that's funny.
So anyway, just a few years later, in 1911, almost 100 years later, the Winter Garden opened. It opened its doors. It's 1,600-seat theater. Which is a Schubert's theater with a show called La Belle Paris.
Yee.
All right.
I haven't been to the Winter Garden.
Al Jolson was in the cast. Katz was playing at the Winter Garden.
Ruined it for me and I wouldn't go back. The first time I went back to the Winter Garden was for Rocky.
Still never seen Cats.
So
I will see it when it's here. 1988. The first version of David Henry Hwang's M. Butterfly opened.
Nice.
With John Lithgow and B.D. Wong.
Didn't you work? You have a great story.
I have a story about
that.
A friend of mine was a dancer at the Tony Awards that year, and she was dancing in the section that M. Butterfly was, and she was standing in the wings with John Lithgow, and they were talking, and there's something going on stage with M. Butterfly, and Sarah goes, people are saying good things about this. Have you heard of it? To John Lithgow. He says, I'm in it. I won a Tony for it. Did he win a Tony that year?
I think he may have, Lisa, but I don't
know offhand. It did not fare the test of time when it opened two seasons ago.
No.
1997, Shakespeare meets Ellington in a show called Play On. It's Twelfth Night set to Duke Ellington's score. And it starred one Andre DeShields.
That's cool.
And Tanya Pinkins.
It's a lot of jazz in Shakespeare. That Cleo Lane likes to do that.
Yep. In 2011, Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, opened with Tony Sheldon, Nick Adams, and Will Swenson, who is now just on Broadway in Dirty Oklahoma. And then this was also... I had to double-check myself when I read this because it's the world premiere production of Breakfast at Tiffany's. And Breakfast at Tiffany's was something that was trying to be a production for years and years and years.
Right.
Finally did open in 2013 and ran for 38 performances and closed. Emilia Clarke was in it, amongst other people. Birthdays, Carl Reiner.
Hello.
Hal Linden.
Ew.
Oh no, sorry, that's the wrong show. Here in the studio, somebody put a welcome
Gabe
back
Kaplan.
Cotter, a Gabe Kaplan welcome back Cotter doll.
And I keep
and
looking
in my
at
mind, I just went to welcome back Cotter when it.
And I just, all I've had in my head this whole episode, it's been hard to concentrate. I've had Horseshack in my head going,
hey, Mr. Cotter.
Mr. Cotter.
If Vinny didn't do his homework and Epstein didn't
mind. Sorry.
All right, never mind.
I still have my board game, Welcome Back, Cotter. Welcome Back, Mr. Cotter. It was the greatest board game.
Okay, well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a little break, and we're going to come back and talk to the Vortex. And we'll hear a little bit of Play On, shall we?
Yes.
Hit me with a hot note. And
you're listening to Lisa Sheps and Nicole Shiro.
Hello.
And Rebecca Melanson.
Hello. Bonjour.
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 Okay, I have to do a little bit of the sausages being made. I've been trying to train Rebecca on this very good habit on the board. But what I didn't say and I couldn't say in our training last night was that in all cases it works except for one, and it's the one you just did. So so she did exactly as I told her to do, but in this one case, it's not a good idea. We're here. We're going to talk to our good friends of the Vortex, which I learned something very important about yesterday.
What?
I'm going to talk after we talk to our guests.
Oh.
So here from the...
tease us like that and keep us hanging.
From the Vortex is Alex Cogburn.
Howdy.
Howdy.
Hello.
And it says here you're the keeper of the butterfly garden.
That's right.
We have Heather Barfield,
the
development director for
Hello.
Vortex, and Crystal Kelly, the general manager of the Vortex.
Hello. Glad to be here.
Well, so here's what I learned. So I have known and been involved with the Vortex since I moved here some almost 20 years ago. Bonnie Cullum was one of the first theater people I met here and has always been very supportive of me and the work I do. And then I just learned yesterday from somebody else that I have been writing the word Vortex incorrectly for 20 years, and nobody has corrected me. Not one person. So do you know what? Heather's nodding her head. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes. How did you do your capitalization?
I did initial caps, as one would do in the standard American language. But the Vortex is all caps.
Correct.
I just learned this yesterday from someone else, and I got really upset. I said, why hasn't Bonnie or anybody told me this? And they said, well, they don't really care. And my feeling is, and I'm just going to admonish you on the air, it's your brand. You should care.
Well, I think somebody does care quite a bit about that, actually.
Actually, I'm glad we're getting the word out right now, because you are not the only one.
No.
I actually made a whole comment a week ago with my colleague Amy, because I saw the Vortex properly. I do not remember where it was. And I go, oh my gosh, that's such a coup. They must be excited. Because it's Zach and Vortex are the two theaters in town with all the caps, and you rarely see them written right, and it drives me bonkers.
All right, so I did not know that Zach was all caps either. I just learned that.
Yes, and it drives me bonkers, and I was all, and I literally called him and go, they got the Vortex right! I was
so
super excited.
I'm gonna push back on the folks at the Vortex, and now I'm going to push back at the marketing people at the Zach, who I've also done work with since I moved here. Nobody has ever corrected me on my spelling of Zach. Nobody's ever corrected me on my spelling of the Vortex, and that's the only way you'll get your brand out. So I'll say it right here on the air from now on, when I write the Vortex, and now when I write Zach, that will be in all caps.
Thank you.
Excellent.
There you go. Okay. So, but we're not here to talk about my spelling things. I do have a whole other thing about ER versus RE.
How did this come up that you learned that?
I was talking to somebody at the theater yesterday while Crime and Punishment was loading in, and I forgot they mentioned something about they did it wrong and were corrected.
Okay.
Oh, no, it was...
I was like, that's a random conversation to come up.
Yeah.
Oh,
right. So we're talking to Lena, and she mentioned that. I said, what? She said, yeah. I said, I've never known that. She said, well, Bonnie doesn't like to make a big deal of it. And I did exactly what I did. Well, she should make a big deal
well,
of it.
Well, so. She used
I love
to.
Talena.
I mean, it's just... it's
had no idea.
It's a constant thing, so...
Had no idea. Well, which is what you do when you do a non-standard spelling. My original theater was Play Theater Group with play was all lowercase with an exclamation point.
Exclamation, I remember.
Yeah, nobody liked that.
Yeah, but some media just you can tell them and they'll be like, yeah, that's great. We're
so
not
I hear
it.
The Vortex is throwing a party.
We are. This Saturday, it's our annual garden party. It's our 9th year of doing this. We are a nationally recognized butterfly sanctuary. A lot of people don't know that.
So I just cool. learned that today.
Yep. And so each year in the spring, we go through this process of replanting and revitalizing our butterfly garden. And this year is supposed to be particularly good for the monarchs coming through. We're supposed to have more than usual. So it's even more urgent that we get it planted and ready.
And now is that because of the unusually wet winter and fall that we had? Alex, keeper of all things butterfly?
I just read that the place where they hibernated was very full, and they were looking really good. Yep. And they're migrating north. They had a kind of a stop and start situation with the cold snaps, but I think they're starting to come in the droves now.
Yeah, my my cousin with her class every year up in the East Coast does helps monarchs and teaches the kids about monarchs and repopulation. I spend my time going around chasing milkweed at the Jersey Shore so that she can bring everything in, and she teaches her students about this and helps repopulate the monarch population.
So did the butterfly sanctuary predate the butterfly bar or vice versa?
It actually came about at the same time.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. For the same reasons? I mean, did...
Basically, okay.
A lot of butterflies. Well, you should have a bar. It's nice.
I'm learning
works like
so
that.
Much about things that I should have already known about.
We had the garden out there, but it wasn't... we weren't gearing the plants specifically for butterflies. We didn't do the garden party exactly the same at that time. And we started being very intentional about it after the butterfly bar came along.
Now, so correct me if I'm wrong, we'll get off the butterfly thing and talk specifically about the party, but it all works together. But are butterflies, are they dealing with the same thing that aren't? Did I hear that there's very much like the bees, like we're losing bee populations?
Yes.
Are we also losing butterfly populations, and that is bad for us?
Alex, do you want to speak to that at all? Keeper?
I don't have a lot of knowledge about the impacts of losing all the butterflies, but sure would be sad to see those butterflies go bye-bye. Yeah.
Well, I mean, a lot of it is the pesticides on, large agricultural systems, which that's what's endangering a lot of the bees, and that's why in countries in Europe even there's a ban on certain pesticides. I mean, without the bees, and even broader, without the pollinators, guess what? We don't eat.
We don't.
And we could lose some of our favorite, you know, vegetables and fruits if we don't continue to supply their food source, right?
Well, so, you know, all this stuff with the environment is not man-made. This is just God's way of having cycles. Uh-oh. Never mind. I'm being sarcastic. And I should say at this point that the views stated here on this show are not those of the station, its board of directors, or its employees. No, man is totally screwing up habitats for everybody, and we should do something about it.
I will say that one of the beautiful things that happens seasonally at in the yard of the vortex, which is, of course, where the gardens are. Right?
That would make a certain amount of sense.
Right. So we have these railings on the yard that have kind of like little safety homes for the monarchs to make their chrysalises. And so some years we'll have so many, and Alex will go around and point out the chrysalis under here and under there. And we have little signs up that's like, don't bother with the chrysalis. Because as if you've ever seen a monarch's mm-hmm. chrysalis, there's this gold kind of outline on its outer cocoon.
It has touched me on it when it shouldn't. Yeah, it's like it's just the way it grows.
It's so dramatic. Mm-hmm. And so we've throughout the seasons we can watch how these butterflies use us as a sanctuary and also as a place to feed. And you know, in many ways I think theater and performance is also a place where we have our ability to feed one another through fun, entertainment, liveliness.
What a wonderful segue.
Exactly.
it's as if the butterfly has emitted from its cocoon into the world as a full-fledged, beautiful flower. So let's talk about the garden party that happens this Saturday. What will I expect to see when I come to the garden party at the Vortex?
So we will have, it's fun for all ages. We have a petting zoo. You can bring a butterfly
plant. I have mixed emotions about that, but go on.
You can bring a butterfly plant to donate and plant it at in our butterfly garden. You can expect to help, if you would like, with the planting of the things that we've already got. Alex is going to pick up some things today. And we'll have arts and crafts, music.
Face painting?
Rock painting.
Rock painting.
Oh. Even better.
Painting rocks.
Even better.
I'm leading the rock painting station, so.
And I know you'll have music. Are there any notable performers? Or
Jamberry Caravan's going to be playing. Mars and Poof.
Honey Sun and Poof Puff.
Poof Puff.
Poof Puff was my sorority name in college.
And we have a French, all-French dance company called Choral Multiple. C'est vrai. And they'll be performing as
bon.
Well. And hopefully, if, you know, the weather is going to be beautiful, I declare it now, we'll have aerialists as well. Celeste, who has been working with us as an intern, is an amazing aerialist. We'll have a cotton candy and we
have raffle
with some fabulous prizes. And so it should be really wonderful. And
so I'm told that the weather's going to hold out for at least the beginning portions of the day. I heard that because of the mighty, mighty dog walk is also happening on Saturday.
Oh, actually, the thing I'm most excited about, or one of the things, is we are also launching a brand new specialty cocktail menu.
Lovely, so, at the butterfly bar.
Yep, and we have that butterfly nectar. That's our
lovely
house-made thing. So.
Well, I will look forward to tasting it next time I'm there. It's Saturday. Where can folks go to get more information about the garden party?
They go to vortexrep.org. That's vortexrep.org. And it's going to be Saturday from 2 to 5 p.m. We're on Maynard Road.
Great. Well, thank you all so much for coming by. Hopefully, one or all of you can stick around and join us backstage.
Thank you, Lisa.
Awesome. Thank you. That was Crystal Kelly, Heather Barfield, and Alex Cogburn of The Vortex talking about their garden party on Saturday the 23rd from 2 to 5 p.m. at The Vortex. More information, vortexrep.org.
I'm a butterfly.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nicole Shiro.
Hello!
And Rebecca Melanson.
Hello.
Bonjour.
No, bonsoir means evening.
It's evening for me. I'm having my cocktails.
I was like, it's not evening yet.
Well, you know, the band is back together again, and I want to take this moment to congratulate Rebecca, who's busy queuing stuff up, to say what a great job she did. I really did. I threw her into the fire. Normally, you know,
she was on it. I've been watching you like a hawk over here, Rebecca. And take the hook and take you down if you didn't do well, and you did very well.
And I was gone for 2 weeks, and 2 months. So I wasn't able to do my teaching and. Between the tutelage of the one Nicole Shiro and what I've thrown at her very quickly, she's done very well.
She's good. She was on it with me a little bit. We went over some stuff while you were gone. She's rocking it. That's how Rebecca rolls. Rocking Rebecca. Rebecca is rocking.
We and love
that's
Rebecca.
What's happening. CD player's stinking. That's what's going on. Woo! That's what's going on.
There we go.
Woo!
So, we're done for the day. So remember, you can like us on Facebook. You can tweet us on Twitter. After this show is Austin Monitor News, if you're listening on the terrestrial radio. If you're listening on the podcast, what are we hearing today?
You are going to hear Backstage at Offstage, and you just go to offstageonair.com, enter your name in the little box, and voila! We will all appear in your mailbox.
Or you can get it at the marketplace at iTunes, however you want to do it. But in the meantime, those of you listening on the radio, stand by for Austin Monitor News. Rebecca, Nicole, and I will be back next week when we look at what's happening off stage and on the air. And this piece of music, I was going to talk about spelling of ER, theater ER versus RE, because I have a lot of information about that right now. So this is why I'm playing this song, which is from a show called Honest Abe.
I before E, except after C, or when sounding like A as a neighbor or way.
Well, the curtain has just come down on the acclaimed straight play, I Don't Remember Bupkis, about a very famous actor named Larry Bupkis, who nobody remembers. True story.
You're on
Fuego. Yeah. Here backstage, we have most of the people that were on the regular show with us. So we have Alex Cogburn. Hi, Alex.
Howdy. Hello.
Brandy Andrade.
Yes. Hi.
We have Heather Barfield.
Hello again.
And we have Crystal Kelly.
Hello.
Welcome backstage, everybody.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So here's what we just
got to learn. That was like choreography, the way they all leaned in together. I just have to let our listeners know. Beautifully executed.
Yes. So here at Co-op, we don't have enough money to supply microphones for every person, so we're sharing quite a bit.
Well, no, because sharing is caring.
Sharing is caring.
We try to teach how to share. There's a reason for that.
Okay. Let's just start with Heather Barfield, because you've never been backstage before, have you?
Never.
Actually, we were talking about this before we went on the air. We think you have, but we don't remember. So just remind folks where you came from.
Well, I'm from Austin.
Texas?
Austin, Texas.
Okay, I've heard of that place.
Yes, this place.
Where is it?
It's also, you know, one could say it's occupied Tonkawa land, because that's kind of what it is.
What does that mean?
Tonkawa are the native peoples of Austin.
Oh, I did not know that. Tonkawas?
Tonkawa.
Mm-hmm. Okay. By the way, in Chicago, it's the Potawatomi Indians.
Nice. Okay.
Which, by the way, just you know, to get your Chicago information, Chicago came from the Potawatomi word, Chicago, meaning wild onion.
Oh, I eat those.
There you go. Okay.
Wild onions.
So you've taught me. I've learned so much from the Vortex Clan today and yesterday. So Tonkawa, Papakwa,
Tonkawa,
Tonkawa,
Tong, like a Tonka truck.
Yeah, you know,
go that go direction, that. But then go on
truck.
The.
I had a Tonka truck growing up.
But
so you're from Austin.
That way.
So right, and then I left to go to NYU. Then I'm a film school dropout from NYU Film.
What year were you in NYU?
Oh my goodness!
Just approximately.
Okay.
Were you there in the
90s? Three, four,
a
five,
a very good friend of mine
95.
And ex-business partner of mine was a film student at NYU, but he predated you by about 10 years.
Okay. Well, then I came back and messed around and then got an anthropology degree from UT Austin.
What?
And with honors, Dr. Pauline Strong, and she actually... I took a lot of courses of natives north of Mexico is actually one of her specialties. So anyway...
Wow.
Then I went back to grad school. The whole time, by the way, I was doing Vortex work, right?
Uh-huh.
So I was one of the original people that was part of Summer Youth Theater. So this would have been in 1990, I believe, and I was in high school, and I was also in high school drama, but then I did the summer theater at
Vortex.
So, like,
Bonnie for you is like Mama Bonnie.
I would say more like Big Sister.
Big Sister.
I don't need it. Another mother.
Okay. You know what? Bonnie be cracking up right now when you said that. That makes it even better.
and so when I finished with the went back to NYU for my master's in performance studies, and then came back to Austin again and did more work and did my Artaud project because I was obsessed with Antonin Artaud because of an NYU professor, Alan Weiss, that I had. And I was just like, what is this theater of cruelty that I love so much?
Now, I know Artaud quite well, but my listeners may not. So why don't you explain who he is slash was?
I was just about to say, can we explain this? Because I know what it is. Yeah. I don't think everybody would, and I think it's kind of interesting.
Oh, goodness. You're asking a PhD scholar about her specialty. So how much time you got?
We don't have much. Give us the nickel tour.
Okay, so Artaud is basically well known for creating this book called The Theater and Its Double, and he was really interested in creating theater that really allows an audience member to be transformed by the theater itself. Very big on ritual, immersive experience. He even wrote something called Le Théâtre Virtuel, the virtual theater, mm-hmm. before we had the headsets, right? And so he lived sort of a life full of misery. He was an opioid addict, and he suffered from childhood meningitis, which pained him most of his life. Sure. And so he's often considered très fou, like the madman of French theater, yeah. but he was a huge influence on experimental theater in the 60s.
So was he a contemporary of Ionesco?
Yes and no. I mean, a lot of people like to do sort of a Brechtian Artaud. Like, if we're gonna think sort of not necessarily chronologically, but sort of theoretically. Mm-hmm. So Brecht, of course, is very politically like let's take away the pretense of theater so that we can really engage with it for what it is, and that'll reach us. And Artaud was like, actually, it is theater, but we're going to just amp it up so much so that you walk away shifted from the whole experience, spiritually, metaphysically.
I like that description. You walk away shifted. Right. Well, I like that.
And I think that if theater, even at its most entertainment-y, if it's doing its job right, it's doing exactly that.
I think so. I agree. But of course, you know, when you think about the 60s and what they were trying to do, like politically, theatrically, sometimes the only way to get the message across would be to do things like Dionysus in 69, like environmental practices of living theater, or what Jean-Claude Vanatelli was doing as well with The Serpent, you know, lots of, you know, hey, you want to be in a part of theater? Well, get on the floor with us and take some clothes off and feel what it's like to be human again. So taking away sort of the fourth wall in many ways.
Now, you've taken all that education, and you also you are
PhD
not
only at UT, so in performance is public practice,
right? So which is how I say all that education.
All that education. I have to, you know, give props to the alma mater.
So, it's all that education.
But you are not only working at the Vortex and doing theater, but you are also a professor as well. What are you professing?
So I'm adjunct professor at ACC, and which, you know, bridges to sort of this next phase in my life. I'm at this, there's a big transition that's about to happen. You know, thanks to my work with ACC as an adjunct professor, I have received a Fulbright, a U.S. Scholar Fulbright grant to do research in France.
I knew this. You told me this a few weeks ago. France. I totally forgot.
Right. So I'll be in the south of France, so in Aix-en-Provence and in Marseille, and I'll be doing work with Syrian migrants as well as the local community to try to sort of bridge communications, relationships, understand, you know, I don't know if you know what's going on in France, but of course, what's happening in Syria and the migration of the people from Syria after the revolution is affecting many European countries. And France is not taking in as many migrants, but my friend Noir Baboul and his wife Vanessa Guignot, they have a theater company, La Seine Theater Company in Aix-en-Provence, and we're going to do collaborative work to do devised theater making called Performing Migrant Stories. And I'm going to do one arts-based research. So it's qualitative research on, you know, how can we use the power of theater to help various communities engage in conversation with each other in a peaceful manner.
Wow. Cool. That is so cool and wonderful, so cool. Wonderfully important work. And now our challenge for the rest of the people we talk to, you have to one up.
Heather. I was like, can you, no, you do make not. It bigger,
better. Oh my gosh. Well, that's incredible. We could talk to you forever, although we can't. But that's
thank you for asking.
That's amazing. So perhaps when you get back from your adventures, you'll come here and we'll do an in-depth interview with
I'd
you.
I'd appreciate that. Thank you.
That just really is amazing.
It's can
really
I just add just cool. one little thing, though, about butterflies very quickly?
Sure.
That butterflies don't use borders, and that the butterflies are coming up from Mexico right now, and they have to go past those borders. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, they will not make it past the wall. They can't. There's a wall there. Finish that wall. Yeah. So, no, we that is a wonderful analogy for what we should be, what we should aspire to. Brandy, what's your story?
So I was the daughter of a missionary in Hawaii.
Okay.
When
she's
I was
doing pretty
up.
Good so far.
And
what island?
The Big Island, uh-huh. The best, Noka'oi. Uh-huh. I just came back from Maui, and I can definitively say the Big Island is still more awesome. Although, all the Maui people, don't be upset. It was totally awesome.
Well, although the Big Island has some five different climates.
I was like, it's very
it.
Different. Yes. It does. There, it's kind of. Anything you want from one of the other islands, just go to a section of the Big Island. Yeah.
And so, what? So the big we all know the Big Island is the Big Island, but it has an official name, doesn't it?
Hawaii Island.
All right. You didn't say Hawaii.
Hawaii. Hawaii. Hawaii.
I was trying to see whether you were going to say Hawaii or not.
No, not anymore. I've been away for a really long time.
Well, cool. So you grew up in? Did you do theater in Hawaii?
I did. I started making theater. So I was a missionary's daughter, so we did a small...
That was the name of my first book, by the way.
My mom taught us at home. She had a small little school, and there were about six of us. And I started writing and directing plays when I was in sixth grade, casting all of us. And the first one was a time-traveling Thanksgiving story where we go back in time and we have... a Thanksgiving with the pilgrims and the Native Americans. And I remember we even did sound effects. We had my cousin Jesse, running the weed whacker while one of us banged a spoon on a glass of water. And that was the sound that the time
you
machine...
You were Foley artists. Foley artists.
So anyhow, I discovered theater. I was a singer mostly. I was a singer all through school, talent contest, sang with my grandpa in church every Sunday, and then I discovered theater, really like real theater, in high school. And
were you in high school in the on the island?
I was, yeah. Uh-huh. And so then I graduated and I went to a really conservative religious college that my parents had selected for me in Oklahoma.
Okay.
Where I was a theater major. And so I got a Bachelor of Science.
So that's
got
to be interesting. So I just have to ask this question. What is it like to be what types of theater are you learning? And what concepts of theater are you learning in a conservative Christian school?
You know, it was kind of an amazing time for me. There at this conservative university, there turns out there were sort of gradations of religious people. They're like the people who are closest to God, and then there's like, you know, Methodists and other people who, you know, like it goes down. And it turned out that there are liberal Christians. Oh, did you all know this?
I did indeed, and I know some.
So it turns out that they're all living in English departments and theater departments in religious colleges. And so I met them all, and I got a wonderful education.
Are they allowing you to do controversial pieces, though?
Or we did. That... You know, I played... so I'm perimenopausal. So the play with the guy... The guy who has sex with horses...
Equus.
I played the mom in Equus. Okay. We did an excerpt from Equus. And yes, we almost didn't get to do it, but the chairman of our department really went to bat for us. Mm-hmm. And so we cleaned up language. We did things. We policed ourselves. That was how he always put it. He didn't want anyone else coming in and policing us. So we made sure that the language was acceptable and that we weren't doing anything crazy. But we did not Jesus Christ Superstar, but the other one.
Godspell.
Godspell. We did Godspell. Other things that would sort of, you know, like raise eyebrows. And we got to do a lot of really interesting things. So I finished with a bachelor's degree in theater. And then I moved to Texas because, did I mention the degree in theater? I had to live with a parent after I graduated. And my parents had split up and my dad lived in Texas. So I moved to Texas.
I'm guessing not Austin.
No, Dallas.
Okay.
And so by the time I was going to leave the nest, I was I found a person that I thought I wanted to marry. So I wound up in Dallas and I went to grad school at UT Dallas and got a PhD in humanities. And I kept thinking maybe I was done with theater. And so I would try an English degree because I loved that in college. And every time we talk about theater, I'd get all excited and passionate again. And I'd think, okay, so I guess I'm not done with theater. And this amazing humanities degree let me do history and literature and theater. And I kind of designed my own program. So I turned out, I ended up studying American women's history, feminist theater philosophy, and theater pedagogy. So all of that came together in a dissertation on Hedda Gabler. You said it was Henrik
Ibsen's birth anniversary.
So it was on Hedda Gabler and the reception of that play at the time in the early 20th century, and how it was maybe the artistic and theatrical realism was being used by women and women theater makers in that time as consciousness raising.
Right.
So it was kind of, and like I was traditional theater practices, and I thought, okay, how can I be so split down the middle? And it seemed to me that this was a way to have my cake and eat it too, is to understand realism as a revolutionary practice that wasn't necessarily, like maybe it was the baby that didn't need to get thrown out with the bathwater. And now, of course, you know, feminist theater making practices of come past that, and you know, realism is no longer off limits. So I was kind of at the cusp of realizing that.
So we have two UT PhDs here in the house. Crystal, tell us about your PhD.
Well, it's not done yet, nor have I applied to any PhD programs at this time. I did, however. So I grew up in Texas, small town, and like I've heard others say, I'm not from Austin. Got here as quick as I could.
Yep. Which town?
Mineral Wells, Texas.
I love Mineral Wells. We used to vacation there.
Yeah. There's a lot of growth right now there. It's a place.
So
anyway.
Are you, I know you're managing director of?
General manager.
Are you also a performer and or a director or any of that?
No, I am not. So my degree from UT was also in anthropology. Uh-huh. My master's from Texas Tech, anthropology. I am by training, a Maya archaeologist, and I've been doing that for 11 years in the summers, and I do presentations around the country on that. But
all you people need to find a hobby and do something
and just bring you water. I have always just wanted to bring water to archaeologists and just be there.
I mean, they'll probably make you dig. That's
I would dig. I dig digging.
Me too.
Yeah.
I love digging holes.
But I've been at the Vortex. This is my 10th year at the Vortex. So I was just a kid when I started.
So how did you find yourself into the theater world from archaeology?
Kismet.
That's a great show.
It was an accident. I met Bonnie Cullum at a work-study job fair when I was 19 years old. And the Vortex was not nearly as big of a thing as it is currently. Right. It was a smaller organization with a smaller operating budget. And as it grew, I grew. And I kind of grew into the role that I have there now. And I don't have any aspirations to be a performer. I am not great at any of the things that are required to be on stage. I can't sing.
Are you now or have you ever been a patron of the arts?
Yes. And so I call myself an arts enabler.
Mm-hmm.
And
we like people like you.
I like operating from, you know, the office or the other side and doing the work that helps make all of it possible. And then coming to the shows and knowing that I had a part in it, even though I don't have the artistic talent to actually have a part in it.
You probably have more artistic talent that you even give yourself credit for or even know.
Yeah.
I believe everybody has an artist in them.
I paint whenever I take Ambien. Well,
there,
so.
There you go. You know.
She's painting the rocks.
So yeah, so does Julia Cameron. That's why she created the book The Artist Way.
Everyone
has an artist within them.
Alex, how's your PhD work coming?
That's non-existent.
Mine too. I'm a college dropout. So, where did you come from? Where are the origin story? Tell us the origin story of Alex Cogburn.
I grew up in San Antonio, Texas, and
for those not knowing, that's a little bit south of here,
about an hour south. I went to the same high school my parents did, and my brother. That was pretty cool. Started getting into theater there, and I was in the band, played music, and did a lot of acting, and went to UT theater and dance program, got my Bachelor of Arts there, and did a lot of acting and dancing at that place, and also worked in the scene shop.
Do you remember your first...
Cool.
That is cool. Do you remember your first non-school-related theater project?
Would say, I did some tap dancing and I wore a big straw hat when I was five.
Love it.
I love tap dancing.
So do I. That just made me happy.
Did you do musicals as well?
Not really. Although no. I remember being very influenced by this version of Singing in the Rain. I saw in San Antonio.
The stage version?
At the Josephine Theater. Mm-hmm. And it was just, I was like, I really want to get really into theater.
That's cool.
Awesome. And we're glad you did.
And I
think my only experience with you as a performer was at Performance Park. And I was talking to you before we went onto the air is how much fun you seem to be having. And what I loved about that show or that experience was... doesn't matter how well we know each other, how long we go back, you guys never broke character.
Yeah. Yes, that was my, that was when I met Alex as well. And it was my first time of going to the Vortex and I had such a good time, but Alex totally led me off the track. We were trying to win and I thought he was giving me good advice, but it was not the advice that I needed. And I was, I know, very untrustworthy character, but you know, he seemed nice, but
well, I went method with the fool, which was my character, and discovered that I have always been the fool. And sometimes I like to know that I don't know. So.
Yeah. Cool. So, what do you have any ambitions to perform or direct or play music coming up?
I usually kind of take those things as they come, and I'm very satisfied. Taking care of the Butterfly Garden at the Vortex, running the box office, helping build the sets for the shows, and taking care of that place.
Like swim anyhow.
Now, did you have any experience in gardening or butterflying prior to attending the Butterfly Garden?
I would say that blossomed at the Vortex. I've always had a...
You emerged from the chrysalis.
A big fascination with gardening from just, you know, from my parents and my own experiments, and was... always like working outside, so I like taking care of those butterflies. Mostly I like the idea of feeding them with the plants, you know.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, I do get a fair amount of butterflies that come through my house during monarch season, so I'm looking forward to them as well. I'm so glad that you guys all came back here to join us backstage.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you.
Come back and visit us again, okay?
Oh, absolutely.
All right.
Wait.
Everybody's wait.
Do you happen to know... what kind of plant grows on your face?
What?
A face plant.
Close.
What?
Tulips.
And we'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Okay, that was pretty
funny. You guys. Bye.